any questions that you have not had time to ask during the day or anything that came up later in the day or yesterday. We've got everyone here except Blanca and Anton, unfortunately, but don't be shy, ask away.
Oh, we've got a question there. Yeah. What are you doing?
One job.
Yeah, one job, man.
I didn't get 10 yet.
Hello. Is it on?
Uh-huh.
Yeah. Oh, yep.
Okay. Sorry, this is a text question, I think. But, like, for example, if I buy an apartment and I sell it, it's a capital gain, and it'll be taxed as a capital gain, right? But if a renovation company renovates the place and sells the place, it's a revenue tax, or is it a capital gain tax?
You did it as a, your business.
Yes.
If you you did it, you do it as a business. Sometimes you do it as a business. It should be taxable as a business income. So not capital gain tax apply if you do it for business. Yeah.
So the property has to be bought under the company.
Not under the company, huh? but under your name.
Under my name, I suppose. Yeah.
Of course. If you do it under your name and you do it as a business, you purchase a property, reform and sell. And you do it as a business. The capital gain is treated as your business income. But I think it is not easy to judge whether it is capital gain or it is a business income. So it depends on the case or your business volume. So I think it would be better to ask your accountant when you judge it. Yeah.
Are the tax rates different? Are the tax rates?
Sure. Tax rate is different. If you are, it is treated as business income, the tax rate of the how can I say? not high. It depends on the income. Maximum tax rate is 45. Yeah, if your income over 40 million yen. But capital gain is a flat rate. So it is different.
Yeah. Questions related to tax and mortgages are always going to be very specific to what your earnings are and how much taxes you're paying in different kinds of circumstances. So for those, it's best to just schedule consultations.
I do just want to add, because I get this question a lot, about that's, I think, in summary, and what Daigo was trying to say, one part of it is when he says it's your business, like your business is renovating properties, or your company, it's their, that's their sole business, or that's their main business, is they buy and renovate and sell properties. So when we sell some, there's some renovation companies, they've got 100 to 300 properties at any one time that they're renovating and selling. So the tax office recognizes them as that's, they're a renovation company. So that's business revenue, not capital gain. But if you've got, like, you know, hey, I've got an English school, that I do, and look, my one place I bought cheap, I renovated and I sold it. Is the tax office going to say you're a renovation company? That's actually your, a big part of your business that you do. If you do a handful every year, 3, 4, 5, maybe yes. But just there was a one-off, it could be treated as a capital gain. And that's also one reason that individuals don't often do the flips that, you know, they buy an old place and renovate and flip it, like what we're used to in the West, is because they get taxed at capital gains rates as opposed to corporate rates that the renovation companies do. But I think that's maybe more aligned to the answer, that the question you were asking.
Right.
Okay, thanks.
Thank you.
I have a two-part question here. And I was curious, it's kind of a strategy thing for me. If we purchase a home, does it go in both our names, my wife and my, or myself? My wife is Japanese, I'm a foreigner. And how easy is it to pass it on to our kids? Is there a lot of legalities to do something like that?
I feel that could be more of a tax and inheritance related question in terms of ownership. You can, if it's a cash purchase, you can say it's 50-50, you and your spouse, if it's joint savings.
And then if I pass or she passes, it just goes into one of our names. It doesn't get like lost in the Japanese system or anything.
That would never happen.
No. Yeah, but...
Japanese is very, everything has a paper trail to the moon and back. There's always a direct inheritance route, unless you have, you know, some unknown heir popping out of the woodwork in Japan or something, but otherwise it's probably not going to be the case. On the Sato-san can explain better than I can, but generally speaking, income is calculated individually in Japan, so there is sometimes an advantage to owning a property 50-50 because you'll both be under a certain tax threshold as opposed to both of you together being over a certain threshold, right? Like the family or one of you.
So maybe Daigo-san can explain maybe some of the benefits of joint ownership.
Joint ownership. In Japan, joint means individually owns 50% each. So that your income should be divided by 50%, you and your wife, and you need to file your income, and you need to pay your income tax personally. Yeah, everything is separate.
But this is for a personal house.
Yes.
Yeah, it's for their personal home, personal residence, not for an investment property.
For this case, just for the inheritance and the gift.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
For inheritance and for gift, the value will be 50% for your own space. In Japan, you can, of course, pass it to your own percentage to your kids. And I think it's a legal related question, but in Japan, I think it's legal share in the paper is everything. Yeah.
So the children will own 50% of whatever the value of the property is.
Yeah. If you pass it,
and have to pay inheritance tax for that amount.
Yes.
So they'll come looking for them. Say they're in the U.S. and we pass away here, they would somehow get in touch with them and say, hey, your parents have passed.
They send a little postcard. It's not like they're going to go into sleuth mode, but yeah.
Now you have all these taxes to pay or something.
Yeah, and if you don't pay it for a number of years, then yes, eventually the property might be foreclosed by the local government, but it's very rare in Japan. It's not really a kind of no reply, let's grab the property. It doesn't really happen here.
And also, like that, often when people talk like that, it's like, are you both going to pass in the same accident? Because I think if one spouse passes, then it'll go to the others. And then so I don't think your kids are just not going to be aware and all of a sudden get a tax bill. Because it'll go, you know, one of the parents will still be around. And I think there'll be some planning and understanding from the children that that's what's going to happen.
I was more concerned about my kids being in the States. They're not really familiar with the process. And I'm not very familiar with the process either. So if my wife was to pass before me, I'd be kind of lost. And then how would I shuffle it all to
What I say to my customers who ask me, you know, if, you know, Chikako and you both die in a plane crash, and who, you know, you're the only ones who've got any documentation of what's happening with the property. How do we get it, or how do we get our income that you're holding for us? The answer is Google Japanese English-speaking lawyer. Show him what documents you do have. They'll get it sorted for you. It's not a legally vague landscape here.
It's for the stream. It's for the people.
All right,
people playing at home.
Just on the gentleman's question, there is joint ownership even possible? We were not able to get that. The property had to be in my name as the principal income earner, which caused a lot of stress. We really wanted to have it in both names.
I'll repeat the question and explain that. So you're saying when he purchased the property, it had to be purely in his name. It couldn't be joint ownership with his spouse. you can split ownership kind of any which way you want, but often the bank, when they give you a mortgage, if they're giving you a mortgage based only on your, like, for example, only the husband a mortgage based on his income, and it's fully financed to the husband, and the wife is not contributing any of the funds, then the bank will often insist that the person they're giving the mortgage to has to be the sole owner of the property. That way, in case they default, the bank can say, our agreement is with, you know, Rob in this case, and Rob, you know, you haven't paid, we have an agreement with you, we can foreclose on the property. Now, if Rob's wife is also 50% owner, when the bank wants to foreclose, the title is 50% of it is by him, and the other 50% is owned by someone who the bank does not have a legal agreement with. So that's the only reason. If it's a cash purchase, or if it's a joint loan, so both the husband and wife combine incomes to get a loan, the bank will be okay with dividing ownership. Or if it's a cash purchase, you can divide it any which way you want.
I think that was it, Emil. The bank refused my wife's financial input. They said, well, no, it's not really significant enough. We'll just go with yours. And therefore, the title's in my name,
which is
rotten, but we had to put up with
it. Yeah, that's the bank requirement, because the bank will have their mortgage lien on the title and they're giving you the money, so that's one of the conditions.
I made a stipulation, given my feminist leanings, that when I bought a house, they tried to do this, they tried to pull this crap with me, and I said, I'm the major breadwinner in the house, absolutely, my name is on the title, we have 50-50% ownership. The mortgage is split differently based on income, so there are two mortgage. Basically, there are two mortgages, two mortgage accounts with the same bank, but the title is 50-50. I insisted on that. I was given side eye and given, it was a hill I was going to die on. It was absolutely a hill I was going to die on. It was hard to do, but it was a non-negotiable for me.
We didn't want to die, so we just took the hit.
give me all your monies, yep.
But that tradition just makes me, like, it gives me the heebie-jeebies. It sucks, but unfortunately, this is what a lot of women have to deal with here, and it gives you very little power. But that's a whole other seminar that I won't go into.
Hands, microphone. Sorry. Robert has no. I mean, hands in the crowd. Anybody has something to ask, or do we have something?
Or someone on the stream?
Yeah, we've got. Yeah.
I want to add on something.
Please.
So for this gentleman, the questions he just had. Can they join own the property? If he's a U.S. citizen, right, why can't you just use a California LLC? If you're doing all cash purchase, right, use a California LLC to hold the property in Japan, right? And then you avoid all the inheritance problems. This one, correct, yeah.
That's a really good segue, actually, into one of the questions from the pre-seminar. The tax matters and legal implications for assets purchased under a foreign trust as a non-Japanese resident. Is this possible? Is this not possible? Or are we getting too weedy into the weeds?
I think that may be for Daigo Sensei. Can you just repeat the question? I maybe missed it.
Tax and legal implications of an asset, Japanese asset, purchased under a foreign trust as a non-Japanese resident.
Not a foreign company, a trust.
A foreign trust.
A foreign trust, of course, you can transfer this asset to trust. Yeah, but I think it would be better to check when you transfer the asset to trust. Sometimes it is a taxable event for gift tax. So
maybe not transfer, but just say a new purchase. So if I'm Australian, if I have a trust in Australia, mm-hmm. and that trust purchases a new property here, so
if purchased through the trust, it is not taxable. Just change the asset in the trust.
I think from an ownership perspective, the trust, because it's not an incorporated entity, the trust can't d-
directly own a property. It has to own a company, and then the company, because properties can only be registered under individuals or incorporated entities, and a trust is not an incorporated entity, usually. I think, but I could be wrong.
Yes, and for trust, I think trustee will be in the name of the registration in Japan.
The trustee, the person in charge of the trust.
Yeah. But I think it is a legal related question, so
yeah, that's
please
something
check with legal lawyer.
Check that with the Shihoshoshi, with the judicial scrivener. We can confirm that. But in any case, because Japan doesn't essentially recognize this trust structure, so the tax benefits would only be in the country of residence. So then you need to factor in whether it's worth it for you to actually set up a company and pay the minimum accounting or bookkeeping that you have to pay every year in Japan, which will be at least, again, 200,000, 300,000 yen a year. So just balance your tax benefits back home against this added expense.
Yes.
We got two questions in the chat. I'm going to go with this first one. You guys might have to help me understanding it. But regarding tax strategy, do you see any issue with buying Machiya House as investment properties to benefit from 4 years depreciation, then after 4 years, transfer the property title to my company? Question mark. Does that make sense?
Yeah, but there's no transfer. You have to pay. You have to make a purchase contract, which has to be within reasonable market price, and then pay the taxes related to that as if you have actually purchased. So it's not like you can give it away for a dollar and avoid all of that.
I'm a bit more curious about the tax.
How
would that
tax benefit?
Yes.
If you will transfer the asset from private individual to corporate, you set up. Strictly speaking, you need to transfer based on the fair market value. But it's difficult to find out fair market value. So in some case, they will ask the specialist for the real estate to calculate the fair market value. And with this report value, we will do it for everything. Yeah.
So you, as everything, you have to balance your how much are you actually saving by investing specifically in that asset class versus how much you're losing on the transfer and see if it's worth it.
Okay, one more question in the chat. Is anyone familiar with K-Buy? Repossessed anonymous bid auctions, good idea? Yes, no.
No.
Avoid
no,
at all
no,
costs.
No.
No.
Unless you're a foreclosure auction otaku and you like spending eight.
You like pain, then Worship Pain is the name of my... it's a terrible idea. I have seen people win, not just they actually bought, they won the bid, but they made it work for them. But geez Louise, you are going into that blind. Yeah. I mean, yeah, it really is. And yeah, don't.
It's a cat in the bag. You have to have a lot of time on your... It's a closed auction, so you're most likely be losing or paying way more than you should have been paying unless you know exactly how much to offer. And you're buying something with very limited due diligence on it that you'll have to take ownership of afterwards. So there are bargains to be had, but it's not an easy road.
Matt, can you just explain what that is?
Oh, yeah, so it's foreclosure or the auction market. Right, and so if something's not being sold, from owner to that transfer isn't necessarily happening. It's being administered by I think the local government, but yeah, it's an auction market, and so there definitely are extremely cheap properties on. But you're buying sight unseen. The information that you get is what they give you. You can't get anything more. And so it's risky. That's
so gamblers welcome.
Yeah.
All right.
I know there used to be at least one company, and I'm sure there are others and the people you can hire who actually specialize in that and do that, but it's a passion project, Akia.
Right? What's the site? It's like 999. It literally looks kind of like a casino thing. Like the 777? Yeah, but
isn't it like those auctions of the people with the storage shed? Like, you know, what's in there? I can't see it. Oh, my God, maybe the crown jewels or maybe a big bag of poo, right? Mm, yeah. I've got a question from the summary. After purchasing my apartment in Japan for residential originally, they were sent forms about money laundering. It seems that banking has become more strict here than and abroad. One used to be able to walk into a bank, buy and sell yen. Less true now. I'm interested in the tax aspects of one's home country and in Japan of owning property in Japan. The apartment in Japan is now being rented out, and they spend an amazing amount of time organising expenses and income and the cross taxation between Japan and America. It's very time consuming now that they don't live here. How do other people manage like remote ownership of Japan assets? Maybe that's a question for you.
Oh, yeah. Hire good property managers and also a tax accountant. Real estate investing is a team sport. You definitely need your team. Finding good members is very important. Save your tons of time. And your US CPAs too, of course. Yeah.
There are bilingual, multinational accounting companies that can service this kind of request, but they are rightfully very expensive. So you look, instead of the $2,000-$3,000 a year for accounting and bookkeeping, it's more like $6,000-$8,000. So if your portfolio justifies it, otherwise, yeah, like Alicia was saying, get a team and you will have to liaise between them at least a little bit. Even if they do most of the work for you, you will have to kind of make the ends meet for both of them, because both of them most likely don't really know much about the other's line of work.
I have a little question, follow-up to that. Is people think that DIYing their taxes is saving money, but is the cost of hiring a professional a tax deduction here in Japan and and abroad? Is that a... I don't know the answer to that. Is it a legal deduction to reduce your tax burden for getting advice? You.
I'm just trying to jump on all the questions. No. I'll be quiet.
Can you write off that as a business expense?
Sure. We should be treated as a business expense. So, yeah, deductible. Fully deductible, I believe.
So don't DIY.
Yeah.
I would say,
DIY is very risky, I think. If you are you have very good knowledge of the tax, I think you can do it by yourself. But if you don't so, there are many tax exemptions, there are many tax complex rules, so I think it would be better to ask your trusted accountant. Yeah.
I think accounting law is like immigration law or any other, tax law is like immigration law, any other law, like things change every year too, right? The thresholds change, the exemptions and deductions that you can claim change. DIY is maybe kind of feasible if you have like a single income stream salary level. And even then, I'd say that there's a lot of stuff that you probably don't know about that you can. Definitely when you're dealing with multiple income streams. Not all accountants, unfortunately, they're quite rare, but people like Sato-san and other accountants that we work with will actually be proactive about it and sit down and analyze your earnings with you and tell you, especially if you're running an own business, even more important, this should be a salary, this should be a bonus, this should be a deduction, this should be turned over to individual names. Let them do their job, because they'll save you way more than you're paying them.
Okay, one more question in the chat. Question for Tracy and Ziv. Pretend you've got 74 million yen of available cash. What property types would you suggest in buying? In my pocket. What property types would you suggest in buying for Minpaku to maximize the rate of return versus investment, and where?
It's an investment, right? So, and I think we did this in the first summit in that we looked at the same building that was, the makeup was like, you know, 1 million, you know, 1Ks versus 2Ks versus 3, and looked at the long-term yield versus the short-term rental yield. And the type of room determined the yield. So if you're looking at a 1K, building full of 1Ks, don't think that you're going to make money on short-term rentals, even if you convert the whole building to 1Ks. You're not. It's a much better yield for looking at long-term. As soon as you get into a building that has 2-bedroom, 3-bedroom, 4-bedroom, it's a different story altogether. And that's covered by other videos that we've done.
So multi-unit, small building with family-sized apartments is what you think is the best, essentially the best use of your time and efforts, most cost efficient, right? Small building with multi-family units, all family sized, like three.
Nothing smaller than a 2-bedroom. So, Like you know, if it's a 6-pack building, it needs each house, each room needs to be more than two bedrooms. But for 74 million, I'm just like, area wise, you're not going to get anything in Tokyo for 74 million.
That was the other part of the question. So where would you buy? Tokyo has the advantage, and I was educated on that a few sessions ago when we recorded with Tracy, and that, you know, I was talking about Sapporo or Kyoto or being seasonal, like, you know, we get this festival and this season, and Tracy was just like, nah, Tokyo is always on. Like, there's no season, there's no high time, low time for Tokyo. But if you're locked out of Tokyo, do you have any ideas of where you'd go Minpaku-wise? Osaka and Chiba City are both Minpaku-friendly by definition, right?
Yeah. How long is a piece of string? I mean, it really it's so many variables involved.
And whether they want to be passive or active, right?
Exactly.
If they're going to be involved in renting out the place and marketing it and advertising and you know, doing stuff, then maybe the countryside would be attractive for them because it's a creative project. They want to be hands-off, maybe stick close to the center of a bigger city.
It comes down to a broader question of why you're wanting to invest. What are your goals? And then finding the vehicle that matches those goals. Don't go, well, that's the place that's going to make me the most money, so I'm going to go there. It's fickle. So have other reasons for buying where and what you're buying, and then make it work from there.
And one more thing, when that question, what's going to maximize the yield? I know for general investments, the uglier, less attractive, older, rundown the building is, the better the yield. Okay, so if you want to a dump 45 minutes from, you know, a station in Hokkaido that's falling apart, you can get 30-40% rental yield.
Until it becomes unattractive.
But you know, 40% yield, great, but you don't want that risk. Then brand new mansions down in Azabu, 1.5-2% rental yield. You go, hold on, I don't need that kind of stability. There's a long spectrum in between. So to say I've got 74 million yen and what's the best yield? Well, what's your risk? That's the right term. What's your risk tolerance? What are you comfortable with? And maybe, look, I'm okay to take a lower yield, but I'm in Tokyo. That's always going to be safe, and it's not seasonal. It's constant.
And how hands-on do you want to be is a big part.
Precisely,
of
yeah. So.
And how much is your property manager going to charge you? This is a question which I don't think has been answered. A lot of the questions that we had in advance, I think, have been covered by the various sessions. But this one I haven't seen. So understanding there's certain building safety standards, and they keep evolving. So before buying a house, how do you check that the house adheres to certain standards? And I think we've covered that. But if you buy an old house that does not adhere to the latest standards, what kind of process do you need to go through to ensure that the renovated house meets the latest standards?
Yeah, maybe more Blanca or Anton have experience with this, but an existing house doesn't need to be brought up to current standards. There's no requirement. So like I mentioned in my talk, 1981 is when the seismic regulation came into place. So pre-1981 buildings don't meet the current seismic requirements. But all pre-1981 buildings don't need additional work to bring them up to code. There's no requirement for that. So if you buy a pre-81 building that does not meet the requirements, you renovate it, there's no requirement that you bring them up to code.
Yeah, there's no council approval type thing.
As to how much it costs really varies on what needs to be done and how accessible the foundation is, and that can can definitely cost the price of the property again.
I just want to caveat that by saying if you're doing this as a rental or as a short-term or a long-term rental, the work that you do on it has an ethical, in my opinion, duty of care. So you may not need to have a legislative, you may not need to have the council come in and say, yes, this is safe. But as a human being that is renting to human beings who are, like, you know, trusting you with their safety, you just do the right thing. Be a decent human being, just saying.
Yeah. I'm in the process now of looking at an old house in the Chiba area, just like as a holiday, you know, beach house. And we're looking at some that are built in the 70s. And with the renovation, we know we can't bring it up to code. It won't, doesn't matter how much we do it within, you know, that's feasible. We can't bring it to meet the post-81 regulations. But you can add reinforcements. You can make it stronger. So it won't meet the codes, but it's going to be stronger than what it was. There are people that own these like pre-81 mansions around Tokyo, and when the owners association, if it's mostly owner occupier, so the owners live there, they want to maintain the building, they want to make sure it's, you know, structurally sound, they get an engineer to come and check, and they say, look, this, you can't make it meet the code. Maybe often, like, if there's a car park on the first floor and it's, like, you know, structured up with just, you know, stilts, it doesn't matter what you do, you may not be able to make it, you know, meet the current code, but you can put additional steel reinforcements just to make it stronger, prevent cracks, prevent major damage. So sometimes owners associations will still go ahead with that work. It doesn't meet the code, but it does make it stronger.
We can do two last questions and then we have to, otherwise we're not going to have time to pack. Can you pass him the mic?
Thank you. Just following on with that 1970 house, is it possible to get loans on older houses or do you have to pay cash?
Largely cash. Look, you can get some loans on pre-81 buildings. It depends if you're talking about investment loan or personal home. So an investment loan, probably no. So when Daigo-san was talking about the usable life, it was 22 years for a wooden structure and 47 for a concrete structure. A lot of banks, for an investment purpose, will say, look, this wooden building is already 10 years old, so it's only got 12 years of usable life left. So we're only going to loan you that amount. And similarly for a concrete structure, they'll do a similar calculation. There are some banks that will turn around and say, look, we'll give you, if it's beyond the usable life, we'll give you just 10 years or 5 years. Like, different financial institutions will have different ways of doing it. When it's for your primary residence, they won't necessarily say the same thing. You know, I've sold some, 40-something, like some Kyu Taishin mansions, 40, 50-year-old buildings, like an apartment. Like, and they're almost like $1 million now in Ibis. You want to find even a 1970s, you know, 3LDK is going to be over 100 million yen. There are some banks that will still finance it. Some of the major banks like MUFG have, from a few years ago, have said, we don't do anything pre-81, Kyu Taishin, but there are some banks that will finance it. So if it's for a personal home, it's going to be a bit different than for if it's your primary residence than an investment. The house I'm talking about sort of in Chibo, like the Akiya sort of ones, some of those, like, it's just they're far away, they're regional. Maybe banks don't like them as collateral to begin with. It's going to be a bit tough. Sometimes with those older ones, maybe the building isn't even registered. The title is a complete mess. The building has been extended. There could be a bunch of other factors, not just the age, which make it not really suitable for financing. But if it's for a home loan, you probably have a little bit more flexibility with older properties.
Thank you.
Last one. There are many attractive locations in Japan. How does everybody decide on where to buy?
That is not something... okay, the only answer I can give to that...
2 second answer.
Okay, I think Matt can maybe expand on that, but I would say... I'm not saying you have to come and visit a particular property before you buy it, but definitely familiarize yourself with the area, whether you've traveled there in person or at least have somebody zoom in with you and show you what the street looks like, what the little village, what the road up, if you're driving. Get some eyes on the ground. Don't just, like, buy blind.
I mean, I don't know if this is a very good answer, but you can kind of do one of two things. And one is roll those dice and not make a purchase, but rather... And I do this every once in a while, just saying, like, oh, what's over there? I've never been there, and I don't know what's going on. And then you go, and honestly, quite often it gets pretty serendipitous, and you run into a person or a business or, like, something very interesting happens. And I definitely support that. It's not risky, but, like, it's uncertain for sure. So that's one way to do it. But then there's also know what you want. I feel like a lot of times... be it for real estate or just where do I want to go on vacation for or whatever, people are kind of waiting for the place to tell them what they want, and they're not really thinking about, like, oh, what, like, I don't know, I like movies or, like, whatever it is, and aren't kind of, what, structuralizing their own, you know, like, needs and desires and dreams and all of this stuff. So I guess either or maybe both of know thyself, number one. And then number two, every once in a while, just throw a dart at the map and get out there. But as Ziv was saying...
Not to buy, to see the place first.
Yeah, right. And as Ziv was saying, though, it is physical. No matter how much research you do, if you're reading and watching documentaries and all this stuff, the media and consuming that, that's a good way to...
The photos make everything look like something out of Totoro in Japan,
exactly.
Right? If you look at a photo, everything is idyllic. Once you're actually walking, you see how many shops are closed at what times, till what time the buses run, are the neighbors giving you the stink eye? There's no substitute for walking in.
But the other thing, and I think there's a lot of people who... haven't been long-term residents here, and I think when you live outside of Japan, that, you know, the marketing and all of the advertising is that there is Japan, but when you live here a long time, you realize that each area is so nuanced, each area is so different, and, you know, it's impossible to just go, well, that's the place I'm going to go, or that's, because it's not all the same. It has, and not everyone is the same thing as well. So, you know, I think, you know, it makes it harder, but then I think here in the panel, we just want to give everyone permission to do what's right for you. Like, pick something or pick a place that is going to suit your family, your needs, your goals, your dreams, and that's okay. I'm giving you full permission right now. So, you know, you don't have to follow, there's no one right way to live a life or
that
invest in real estate.
Perfect note to end on.
Sorry?
YOLO. Thank you very much, everyone.